through amending the statutes is to amend the county clerk statutes to reflect the provisions in the commodity statutes. In Section 1 of Senate Bill 181, which is on the first page of the bill, amends the county clerk statute 205130, which states that orders provided in 645950 shall be recorded in the county clerk lien record. This amendment will allow the department to execute upon the lien for the civil penalty and will provide that such filing will have the same force and effect as execution upon a judgment of a court of record. This amendment allows the department to collect the civil penalties when respondents do not pay them. The security statutes found in Chapter 59 have a parallel provision, and the commodity statutes were modeled after the securities provisions. However, the provisions for commodities in the county clerk lien record were inadvertently omitted during the 1987 session. And that concludes my testimony. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them. Are there questions?
Madam Chair.
Sure. Senator Brockman.
How old are these, the $5,000 penalty for every violation? Do you have any idea when that first
Yes, sir. The commodity statutes were just passed by the 1987 session, and they were enacted September 27, 1987, so they're about 18 months old.
Relatively current.
That's yes,
fine.
Sir.
I'm just thinking if we're having an outbreak of bucket shops selling phony gold commodities, $5,000 isn't a whole lot of money. And we're charged with dealing with the civil penalty in this bill, are we not, as opposed to the bill in general?
That's right.
I don't think that's a whole lot of money.
Well, you're raising the next one, which deals with entities who violate securities laws. So I suppose we could really embark here let's hold that off and okay. See what you think about that when we hear about the next bill, which right. does raise civil penalties for another classification of violations, if you will. Let's talk about Senate Bill 182 then. There's no one else signed up on 181, and I wouldn't expect that to be any. Okay.
Senate Bill 182 was also pre-session filed at the request of the Department of Insurance and Finance, and the Senate Committee on Business, Housing, and Finance has heard this bill and passed it on to this committee.
Okay, now I want to stop you, Lloyd, because we are in a bit of a rush and say you don't need to go through the whole procedure.
That's correct. I have about half a page to say
it operates. let's just go to what you're really asking that's
right.
new with this section.
That's correct. Section 18 is the portion of the bill that this committee is concerned with. The purpose of the amendments in Section 18, which are on page 17 of the bill, are to increase the civil penalties that may be imposed by the director in an administrative order issued against persons or entities who violate the securities laws. The amendments increase the amount of the penalty from $2,500 to $5,000 for each violation and from $10,000 to $20,000 for a continuing violation. The current civil penalty amounts of $2,500 and $10,000 have been in effect since 1973, and that was the year that the statute was amended to include administrative orders and civil penalties for those orders. Since these civil penalty amounts have not been changed in 16 years, an increase in the amount is long overdue. When an administrative order is issued against a person who has defrauded an innocent consumer out of tens of thousands of dollars, a small penalty of $2,500 is simply the cost of doing business to the con artist. The increases in the civil penalty amounts will allow the department to impose more appropriate penalties for the severe harm caused to consumers by persons and entities who violate the securities laws and therefore give the department a stronger enforcement tool. The security section also administers Chapter 645, the Commodities Code, which was enacted in 1987. The civil penalties under the commodity statutes are $5,000 for each violation and $20,000 for continuing violation.
Okay. So that's what we're having here as a request to raise it as parallel. Senator Brockman, I think, is questioning whether
that's
they
enough.
All ought to be higher, and I
yeah.
want
to
discuss that.
I just wanted to find something here because in this testimony here it says against persons or entities. Now, if we're talking about boiler rooms, as you call them, I always call them bucket shops myself, but that's
fine.
Persons or entities. Now, traditionally, a bucket shop's got 15 or 20 people manning the phones.
That's correct.
Now, is the boss of the bucket shop the entity that's going to get the $5,000 fine, or is it each individual person that is manning the wires?
Senator Cohen, Senator Brockman, the way that we charge in our administrative order is against a number of respondents, and we name all the entities that are involved. In a commodities, an example of a recent administrative order under the commodity statutes, we would charge the boiler room operator, all the salespersons, the person in charge of the boiler room, the accounting firm where the money was sent, the mining and refining company that did the bogus deals,
so
the geologist
the
who did that.
That
I,
yeah.
They would all be named in the order.
That's,
yes.
That's fine.
And we
as separate $5,000 violation.
That's correct, Senator Cohen.
Okay.
Further questions to us?
Can you tell us, say, in 88 or 87, how many occasions in which it was necessary to levy a fine, and whether in those circumstances the maximum fine was levied, and some idea of the total amount of penalty monies collected?
Senator Cohen, Senator Springer, I don't have exact figures on those. I can give you some pretty good estimates. We issue a number of administrative orders that do not contain fines, and I would guess that probably 90% of our orders contain fines. We can issue orders denying a securities license, and we feel that there's no need to impose a fine on someone for applying for a securities license, for example, so we don't impose fines in those kinds of administrative orders. In the commodities administrative orders that we issued against one of our commodities boiler rooms, we had 12 different persons and entities, and we fined them each $5,000. And then we also charge them with securities violations and fine them $2,000 apiece for securities violations. They range. There are times when there are minor violations, we'll fine $200, $250. I would guess in perhaps 20% of the cases, we would go for the maximum fines. They have to be pretty egregious to go for those fines.
Thank you.
Thanks.
What's a continuing violation as opposed to a single violation? Course of conduct?
Senator Cohen, Senator Shoemaker, we've had a real difficult time trying to figure out what a continuing violation is, and therefore we've never used continuing violation language in our administrative orders. It's unclear what that means. So I've been reluctant to put that in. So I've always used the...
Actually, that's a carryover from Senator Springer. We recognize some of our environmental statutes that had to do with a indication of where we use boilerplate in this business, and it has to do with environmental pollution primarily. That's where that came from in terms of the authority to initially used by civil penalties way back when we gave one single agency 20 years ago the right to do civil penalties, and the continuing violation came in under those circumstances that if you were given notice of violation and you continued to violate, then they gave the opportunity to violate per day or some other kind of thing. Probably doesn't apply to her circumstances, but that's where that language comes from historically.
Well, I see that we have it in both statutes, and of course you want to increase it to $20,000 from $10,000. Would it be worthwhile to define what it is you mean so that maybe you can use it as an enforcement tool? Do you have a concept in your mind about what it is?
Well, it's always been unclear, and we've talked about this a lot, and we've talked about this with the Attorney General's office, and we looked at case law, and we looked in different places where we might try to get some ideas about that. For example, if someone ran, would you say a single violation would be one investor, one act? A continuing violation would be 30 investors over a month. Is that a continuing violation? Or is placing one fraudulent ad in the newspaper one violation, but if you did it over 3 weeks, that would be a continuing violation? I don't think that we ever sat down and said, well, if we had a magic wand, this is what we'd call a continuing violation. So I haven't come to that yet, sir.
Think it might be useful to do that?
Oh, yes, it would be, certainly. And if Senator Cohen, if you have some ideas, since you know where this language came from, I'd sure like to.
Yes, well, we'll get our staff to talk to you. There are some very explicit rules on what is meant by continuing violations in other agencies around the state that use that language and they have done it by administrative rule under this particular language.
So we could keep the language and just, by administrative rule, define what that means.
What you mean by continuing violation, yes.
Be wonderful. I think that would be a very wise thing for our section to do so that we could use those statutory provisions. Absolutely.
I take it that your action often leads to a civil suit by the victim, and what you do provides them pretty good grounds for an action for damages. And do you find that follows fairly often from what you do, or do you know?
No, not necessarily. I think a lot of, when you're a regulatory agency like we are, I think a lot of consumers think that not only are you supposed to go after these people, but you're supposed to get their money back and act as their attorney. So it's real difficult. And I think that by the time we get to some of these people, there's no money left, because we don't hear about the violations until people start losing their money. And then typically the people that we're going after are skipping town, and they're hard to find. So I would not say that happens, no.
In light of that, is even $5,000, in light of that plus the fact that you don't pursue what you call continuing violations, is $5,000 more than just the cost of doing business? In other words, are you really going to get at the problem of trying to eradicate this or reduce it through $5,000 penalties?
Oh, yes. I think, in fact, when we take an administrative action, there's a whole network of crooks out there, and they all find out that the state is after, you know, one of their group. And the word gets around real fast. It's not, it's not some little quiet thing that happens in Salem. And I do think it's a deterrent when we go through and issue an administrative order and then have the power to file a lien against them. And then they try to sell some property, and there's a lien on that property. They pay the fine. That's happened in a couple of cases in the last year. The other thing that we can do oftentimes is we try to use those penalties as a lever with some of these people to say, well, you want to settle this case? We'll take away the fine if you pay back these investors. We'll reduce the civil penalty or we'll drop it.
Bill, $5,000 is enough.
Well, the reason that I went for $5,000 was because I wanted to raise it. The legislature said last year for commodities we'll give you $5,000 and $20,000, and I sort of felt that was maybe the limit of what I could go.
I'm not sure it is.
Well,
no, I don't think it is. And one final question. Would it be useful to be able to register a civil penalty as a foreign judgment in a foreign jurisdiction? Imagine a lot of these people come from somewhere else and their real property is somewhere else.
Yes, and we can do that, sir.
Can you do that?
Yes, yes.
Already?
Once it's in the county clerk lien.
Then it is a judgment, and it is respected as a judgment in another.
Yes, and Senator Cohen, Senator Shoemaker, what we often do is ask for example, call California Securities and say, hey, can you help us with this? And they can help us with some of their procedures in their states.
You do register. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Brockman.
Just as a point for all of you to chew on, particularly your operation, even when you're playing with real commodity futures, let alone fraudulent ones, $5,000 is no big deal for someone to win or lose when you're betting on the real thing. It's an extraordinarily volatile market. I've seen fortunes made and lost in a week. So it's $5,000 is no biggie.
Senator Brockman, Senator Cohen, I completely agree with you. And we use our administrative process a lot because it's easy and cheap and straightforward.
Okay.
But, you know, and if we could increase those penalties, then that sure would make it easier for us.
Okay. It would have been nice if you had come in with a list of what you thought would give you what you needed in this. I suppose we could hold the bills over and hear if the committee is interested in looking at it. I'll hold them for another day or two until we bring them up again. But it's only if people want to move ahead. Let's get a sense of the committee who wants to hear from the agency about further increases in this area. And if that's a sense of the committee. I'll hold it open. We can wait for them.
Maybe that issue could be dealt with as this moves through over
the
other
side. That's a good idea.
Rather than continue to hold it up, we've got so many bills.
I'm happy to. I don't want to run over this committee, and I've got at least two members who want to do it, and I've got another member who's prepared to make the motion right now to move them out as it is. And maybe that's a suggestion that you ought to take to your. To heart to say that when you come back over, they might have a sense of concurrence. At least you've got a few members here who are interested in your presenting your case to the House and see what you can think on these. Okay. Senator Hill, you want to concur to that idea?
Yes, I would concur, since we asked the same question in the Business, Housing, and Finance Committee, and nothing was done there. I didn't think that they were prepared, and I assume these were based on the Model Act. Madam Chair, I would move Senate Bill 181 and 182, the floor of the due pass recommendation.
Oh, let's do them separately.
I'm sorry. Senate Bill 181.
Senator Hill moves Senate Bill 181 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. For the discussion, could you call the roll, please?
Brennan?
Aye.
Brockman?
Aye.
Brinsky?
Aye.
Hill?
Aye.
Shoemaker?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you. Senator Hill.
I'm trying to move Senate Bill 182 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Hill moves 182 with a due pass recommendation to the floor. Discussion. Call the roll, please.
Brennan?
Aye.
Brockman?
Aye.
Gensky?
Aye.
Hill?
Aye.
Shoemaker?
Aye.
Springer? Cohen?
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you. Thank you. Senator Hill, well, we're here. We're missing a Springer's gone. He'll be back momentarily. You want to take up Senate Joint Resolution 20?
Yes. Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and I'll be brief. Senate Joint Resolution 20 is a memorial for former Judge Thomas C. Enright, who was a member in good standing in our community here in Salem. This bill was a bill that was pre-session filed by former State Representative Rocky Berea. This would mean a great deal to former Judge Enright's family and to our community. I urge its passage. Thank you.
Would you like to move? We don't have it as a work session, do we? Okay. Well, that's an error. Sorry. Sorry about that. Then let's close the hearing on SJR 20. Senator Kinnemer is here. Senate Bill 1117. And then let's track down Kelly, Representative Clark. Yeah, we will, I want to hear from him.
Memorial.
Senator Kenmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senate Bill 1117.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm State Senator Bill Kenmer, District 12, Clackamas County. Appreciate the opportunity to be before you regarding Senate Bill 1117. I began working back in the summer of 1987 with a group of people and attended a number of their meetings and began to see a group of people who were concerned, diligent, and sincere, and not vindictive, but just out for the good of kids, a group called ACES. And I began to work with ACES during the interim to determine how best to deal with some of their issues. And we established nine major issues. As we developed these issues for the legislative session, we began talking with Wayne Kraft, who's the Deputy DA in Clackamas County, and Jim O'Leary, who is the Clackamas County DA, John Ellis of the Department of Justice, and Bill Cockrell of AFS. And as we investigated these issues, we found that many of them were going to be covered in the Department of Justice's package dealing with the Family Support Act, the Federal Family Support Act of 1988. One of the things that did come out of this was the idea to create a task force to identify issues and to make some recommendations, and that's what Section 2 of this bill is about. I think it's a good idea. It'll make the system faster and more effective. The statistics that I have to date indicate that Oregon currently collects 16.2% of the support that is owed. The national average is 22%. Oregon child support debt last year that was owed through the state was over $242 million. And I think when Brenda Brames comes and testifies, you'll find that she has some other data to indicate a figure perhaps twice as high when you figure all debt. So very substantial debt. I think that allowing this to occur is a very bad social policy. I'm afraid that it tends to teach kids that their parents don't care, deprives kids of their rights to be protected and taken care of, not to mention love, and it fails to hold people responsible. I think that's a bad social policy. Its result is that kids often are forced to live in poverty, and the state's often left with the responsibility of picking up the tab. I think if we can find some ways to increase enforcement of support, that would probably be to the best interest of all of us in Oregon. And I appreciate the opportunity to present my testimony, and great. If you have any questions, be delighted.
Thank you very much. Are there questions, Senator
Kenmer? One question. I note in the packet that there's been some proposed amendments from the Department of Justice, which I think changes the makeup of the committee. And I wondered if you've had a chance to look at that and how you respond to that.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Shoemaker. I think that what's critical is that something happen. And the composition of that committee is something that I really am very open to. And I would be happy to go with this or something that the committee would find acceptable. I think the issue is how can we get better enforcement of support, something I think that's clearly in the best interest of the kids and ultimately all of us.
Thank
appreciate you.
You
bringing that to my attention.
Senator Hill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Bill, how much do you think would be needed?
Well, that's a question, and I think Ms. Brames may have some other opinions about that, and I'm not sure. I would like to see it as modest as possible so that it becomes as modest a ways and means issue as possible. That's always the major bugaboo. On the other hand, you're talking about something, you know, when already the state is owed $242 million. By any stretch of the imagination, you would not have to be very successful in the concepts to quickly recoup that in many thousands and millions, perhaps, of dollars over that. So hopefully that's some of the balancing that can be done. But again, that's always the bugaboo we face here.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Colleen Seelock is here to present some amendments.
Good evening, Senator Cohen, members of the committee. I am Colleen Seelock. I'm the administrator of the Support Enforcement Division, Department of Justice. I'll be very brief this evening. I believe you have a copy of my testimony before you, along with the amendments which the Department of Justice would offer. The Department of Justice does not take a position on this bill. However, if if considered, we would like to recommend a little bit different membership. We believe that membership is more a more representative cross-section of the public as well as the child support enforcement community. Like Senator Kinnamer, we understand that child support is a very important part of today's world, and we are attempting to present a full package, which you will probably be seeing in the near future. Most of our bills were introduced on the House side. They are currently before the House Judiciary, and hopefully will be arriving before you soon. But our position on this bill is one of neutrality. However, we would recommend just a slight differentiation in membership.
Any questions? Yes, Senator Brock.
I really hesitate to bring this up, but due to your neutrality position on it, are you satisfied that that your support enforcement is working? And tell me, is your lack of support or negativism towards the bill because you're pretty happy with the way things are going, the way you're doing it, and you're just being polite?
Senator Brockman, members of the committee, no, it is not negativity towards the bill. It really is a neutral position. We really see child support needing a lot of new resources, both to accomplish current federal compliance issues as well as trying to enact some of the new ones we'll be facing because of the Family Support Act. One of the problems that obviously we have is having enough staff, having other kinds of resources to track obligors who are unwilling to pay, to try to locate where they work if they are working. So where we see our position on this particular bill is anytime you can gather a group of citizens together in the interest of improving a program, certainly that's appropriate.
Well, it just seems to me, and I'm not denigrating the bill, but that because so many members of this committee are on it, by the way, among other reasons. But it just seems to me that I can see 9 or 10 people, or however many of them there are going to be, sitting around, and I can't see them coming up with any more creative collection than the Attorney General's office could come up with. I mean, I think you've probably exhausted most of the creative mm-hmm. techniques that you can come up with, but I would hope that that's not the case, but I'll give it a shot.
We would hope not too, Ben. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. I'd like to ask you, how is your division funded? Are you funded on the basis of how much you collect?
No, not at all, Senator Hill. We are funded through, it gets rather complicated, so please bear with me and also feel free to interrupt. Our funding is currently 68% federal dollars matched by 32% state dollars. That will be switching this next biennium to 66% federal dollars. Those dollars are actually appropriated to the Department of Human Resources, AFS. The Department of Justice and the Support Enforcement Division gets their funding from other funds that flow through AFS. AFS is the record keeper of the child support program. Therefore, all of the federal dollars must go into their funds, and then it's all transferred to us.
Senator Kinnamer, I don't know if he's still here or not, he told me he was going to be here to discuss this bill, and he said that the national average is that in most states collect 22% of the funds that are owed them, and that we're at 16. I guess it's sort of a follow-up to Senator Brockman's question. If it would seem that if a task, given that we were talking about, Senator Kinnamer mentioned $240 million mm-hmm. that's owed, and what this would mean to the child and to the daughter, I guess I'm a little... perhaps disappointed that the department is not fully behind this bill and would be encouraging it to be funded at a high level, because we should at least learn something from some other states, it would mm-hmm. seem.
Senator Hill, not trying to sound defensive, there are lots of statistics with respect to the child support programs across the nation. One of the problems the federal government has is there is no states that are identical in the collection of those statistics. So we become somewhat defensive when people start tossing out numbers that aren't fully explained.
Maybe that's why he didn't toss them out, but we had that discussion.
Yeah, we receive a booklet that's about 90 pages long each year, and it is in the, each page is an individual table with numbers reflecting different kinds of statistics. I can present to this committee certain pages of that booklet that will show you that we are ranked third in the state, in the nation, in our child support program. At the same time, there are new federal audit criteria being adopted to match the Family Support Act that was passed last fall. They just published those. They just sent them to us. They did a review of them on the state's current performance. Oregon was ranked seventh in the nation. I'm not here to say that we can't collect more money. Obviously, it is a very dismal amount that we collect compared to what is owed. But at the same time, I really do want to impress upon you that we have a very good program in the state of Oregon, and it is nationally recognized on many different kinds of aspects. But we do need to do a better job. The entire nation needs to do a better job in recognizing their responsibilities when it comes to paying child support.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Senator Springer.
How long have you been working with support enforcement over there?
I've been with the division for 2 years, Senator Springer.
2 years?
Mm-hmm.
Seems to me back in 81 or 83 session, at the urging of either the Department of Justice or DHR, we basically decomputerized the record-keeping capability